Republicans to wake up is... The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
My thanks to the listeners who subscribe to this program, including Joe Carson, Todd Sanchioni, Nancy Mrazek, and Cheryl Curry. Our bonus book offer is still in effect. You can get the details and subscribe at peterbcollins.com.
Hear ye! Hear ye! The court's in session. The court's in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge!
The Supreme Court remains in session. It will end its term, we think, later this week. And most news agencies are focused on its decision in the Affordable Health Care Act, so-called Obamacare. But here at peterbcollins.com for the last several weeks, we have been focusing on a case that came before the court brought by the state of Montana and its Attorney General, Steve Bullock. And that's an important distinction. It was brought by the state of Montana. And today, they announced the results of their conference last Thursday. And as Adam Liptak of the New York Times had predicted, they issued a dismissal of the case. They didn't hear any arguments. They decided that they know what's best for us. And to air this case out, to litigate it, even though there were four justices who clearly didn't support this rubber stamping of Citizens United, that was the way this unsigned opinion or per curiam, was determined. Adam Fergatch is the activist who heads up the organization called TEAM, the 11th Amendment Movement, and Carl Mayer is the attorney. We've been talking with both of these gentlemen for several weeks now, and I know we're all disappointed at the outcome of this case. Let's go to you first, Adam. When you woke up this morning and checked on the internet, were you surprised at what you saw?
I was not surprised. I will say, of course, disappointed. We always felt that the 11th Amendment argument was hands down the strongest argument to win this case, to claim that the Supreme Court had no jurisdiction to hear the case that was brought against a sovereign state. The 11th Amendment forbids a private party, in this case a corporation, from suing a sovereign state in a federal court, and this was the strongest argument to win the case. We were dumbfounded when Montana themselves did not raise the argument. So for the court to take our amicus briefs, we filed briefs in support of Montana,
right,
with the court, for them to take our argument separately, we felt, well, it was always possible, but it was more than a bit of a long shot if Montana themselves weren't going to claim their sovereign rights, then why would the court want to listen to us? And these arguments were not only the strongest on a jurisdictional ground, but also it was a new argument. Montana and the other states made the same old argument on the merits of money corrupts politics, and the court was under no obligation to hear the same old arguments to make a ruling. So,
I wasn't surprised.
This was perhaps the most likely outcome, but we tried to keep an optimistic viewpoint here, and we still do. There may still be some things that we can do.
And let me read from the opinion released by the court. The question presented in this case is whether the holding of Citizens United applies to Montana state law. There can be no serious doubt that it does. Montana's arguments in support of the judgment below either were already rejected in Citizens United, or failed to meaningfully distinguish that case. Carl Mayer, you can tell us that you told us so, because you predicted that if given the opportunity, this is what the court would reaffirm.
That's right. The opinion now is supremely predictable, supremely disappointing, supremely anti-democratic, and unfortunately, it's like watching a football team constantly run the ball up the middle, even though the defense keeps stuffing seven linemen up the middle, and not try another play. So Montana could have tried another play. They could have asserted that the court doesn't have jurisdiction, and they didn't. I don't know why. We'll never know the real reason why, but everything is entirely predictable here, because now the Democrats are going to go out and they're going to campaign on Citizens United, and they're going to talk about what a terrible opinion this is. And meanwhile, they're going to continue to take corporate cash, and the Republicans will do the same thing that they always do. And it's business as usual. Corporations running the country, and that's what's occurred here. And it's really a shame, because there was a real opportunity to get the court to sink its teeth into a states' rights argument. Now, the conservative five-person majority here doesn't get a pass either, because the five-person majority, they've ruled many times. Kennedy, Scalia, the rest of them, they've ruled many times on 11th Amendment grounds. They're all advocates of the 11th Amendment. They could have themselves declined to hear this case on states' rights grounds. So they have now exposed themselves as hypocritical in their views about states' rights. In other words, states' rights goes out the window when it's a case of the corporations exercising their prerogatives to control elections, either at the federal level or the state level. So there's nothing left but raw, naked corporate power. And unfortunately, more and more Americans see that, which is why the court is at its lowest level of support amongst the population since public opinion polls began polling the people's view of the court.
And Carl, I agree with you about the five-member majority. What about the four-member minority? Doesn't precedent, or at least protocol at the Supreme Court, suggest that if they had pushed harder, that the majority would have at least had to honor their desire to go the normal route, to certify the case, to accept arguments, to hold oral arguments, and to do essentially a full review of Citizens United? And it appears that the four Democratic-appointed justices didn't put up much of a fight.
Well, it doesn't appear that way. Originally, people thought that the cert petition would be decided upon last Monday. So there was a delay of a week.
Yeah.
It's hard to know internally what happened. I would think that the four-person minority could have gotten it postponed until the fall if they really wanted to either put up a fight on the issue of the cert petition or try to get it calendared for argument. It's hard to know what goes on in these strategy meetings, but I would think at least that the one of the four members of the minority on the court could have themselves written a dissent based on the 11th Amendment, based on what I just said, which is the majority of the court is very clear that they're states' rights advocates and advocates of the 11th Amendment. And for that reason alone, they should have voted to deny cert, to deny the petition in this case. And
Peter and Carl, just today, even today, just after they denied or summarily reversed Montana, they came out with their opinion on the Arizona immigration. And I didn't get the details, but in dissent on one of the measures, they had split decisions on certain issues in that case. But on one of the dissents, Justice Scalia, they apparently said something, well, no, it's states' rights, that Arizona Arizona should be able to do what they're going to do there.
Yeah.
And so on the very same day that they deny Montana their state's rights, the same guy who could have voted for Montana state's rights is dissenting, saying that Arizona would have their state's rights in this other case. So.
Yep, that is incoherent and inconsistent. That is our Supreme Court, which is supposed to be making rulings based carefully on precedent and honoring precedent. That's what the whole stare decisis discussion is about at these confirmation hearings. And we saw Alito and Roberts pledge to honor stare decisis. And now that they have a lifetime appointment to the court, they just freely turn their backs on it. And the inconsistency is quite stunning. And Carl, let me ask you about this, because in this very brief opinion that was issued, the second clause of this sentence here, that the arguments fail to meaningfully distinguish that case. Many of the arguments presented related to the implementation of Citizens United in this presidential election year, the huge amounts of cash from unidentified donors that has flowed through super PACs and that has had a dramatic impact, at least so far, on the Republican presidential primary. And they seem to be looking at that and saying, right on, man, this is really working. This is exactly what we wanted.
Yeah, unfortunately, and I'm going to be a little heretical here, Peter, because the entire media is focused on the Obamacare decision, which comes down later in the week. And I think this case here is by far more important than that, because either way the Supreme Court decides Obamacare, the corporations win. Either they get a light touch regulation by Obama that helps out the insurance companies and requires everyone to have coverage, or they don't, and it's back to the status quo, and they can do what they want in the marketplace. So, but this case here, what this case has done is set up the conditions for an orgy for public lobbyists, for corporate lobbyists, for money in politics, and it really this is now the final degradation of our democracy, because now we see that Citizens United applies not just to the federal elections but potentially every state election. And frankly, the two additional problems with the Supreme Court opinion are that, number one, it's another summary reversal, which this court has used too frequently. It's very anti-democratic to write an order and then not explain the lawful basis for that order. So they should at least be taking opinions and hearing cases.
Well, Carl, they know what's best for us.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they if you're named Exxon, Mobil, J.P. Morgan, and Bank of America, they do know what's best for us.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
if you're an average citizen in the United States, this is, I think, the second most damaging opinion after Citizens United. I would say since the era of slavery, and it really is. It really is a big blow.
It certainly is. Adam Furgetch, I want to ask you about the role of Steve Bullock, Montana's attorney general. While I don't think this is actionable, and I'm not a lawyer, and will identify that you're not a lawyer either, I consider it an abuse of his discretion that he failed to embrace the 11th Amendment argument as the most the safest, most expedient way to prevent the Supreme Court from overturning the decision of the Montana Supreme Court. And you issued a press release last Friday where you described the Attorney General of Montana's position as oddly confusing. So let's talk about Steve Bullock here and how his gamble, which appeared to be to help support his campaign for governor of Montana this fall, has left the entire nation adrift here with limited ways of further attack on Citizens United.
Yes, the Attorney General's office issued some statements last week
that just were nonsensical is may not be the right word, but they just didn't make sense. And I pointed out in a press release that one of the statements was that the 11th Amendment argument would allow states to resist application of the Constitution. And I think what they meant was that, and they said in another statement, that that would mean a state could ignore a Supreme Court ruling if they wanted to. And my answer, they said, well, that the 11th Amendment argument would allow a state to not apply the Constitution. And my question to them was, well, what do they think? The 11th Amendment isn't part of the Constitution all of a sudden? I mean, on the contrary, the 11th Amendment argument allows the precise application of the Constitution to prevent the federal court from dictating to a state in certain circumstances, and this is one of them, on what to do. Now, just a little earlier, and you've been saying that the Supreme Court knows what's best for us. Well, to put it a little more precisely, what we were saying is that the Supreme Court knows what's best for the states, you see. And that is a fundamental structural difference in how the Constitution was prepared, was thought out very in precise terms, and then the 11th Amendment clarified it, and 200 years of later court decisions established that the Supreme Court cannot tell us or cannot tell the states what to do in every circumstance, and the states have the right to say, no, we will ignore that decision because that's outside your jurisdiction. And that's what the 11th Amendment provides. It's what guarantees the states their sovereign status. It allows the people living in those states through their state government to protect the rights that are reserved to the states or to the people, as the 10th Amendment would also say. And in this case, the Supreme Court had a power grab. They got it. No one stood up for Montana's own rights. But hopefully, as we're looking into a few other things, they can still raise it in the federal district court. And there may be other types of cases where it can be brought. And we're still looking at other options, even in this Montana Supreme Court case.
Carl Mayer, I am finding myself in a position where I have no confidence in the credibility of the United States Supreme Court. And you cited the recent poll that shows that credibility of the court is below 50%. It's 44% in this recent public opinion poll. And when we look at the issues presented here, and we look at the manner in which the court, somewhat deviously, changed the name of the case so that it was against Steve Bullock and not the state of Montana, which can be interpreted as an end run on the 11th Amendment argument that you raised. And then we see the gamesmanship of the Attorney General of Montana, who put his political fortunes, I think, ahead of the interests of the entire nation. And then we have the Democratic Party that pays lip service to any kind of campaign finance reform, and then goes out and raises, hopefully, as much money as the Republicans do. And so it's very hard to have confidence that this system is working the way the founders intended.
Well, as you actually raise an excellent point, Peter. I've argued in some of my writings that there were actually two flaws with the original Constitution. The first, of course, was that the framers of the Constitution never dealt with the issue of slavery. And that took a civil war and an enormous strife in the nation to finally resolve, and an amendment process to resolve. But the second flaw that no one really talks about is that the separation of power scheme that's set up by the founders only applies to three branches three branches of government, it doesn't apply to the institution of the corporation. And so now you have a government that is entirely enveloped by the corporation. The modern corporation has swallowed all three branches of government whole,
mm-hmm.
and is directing all three branches of government. It directs them to subsidize what corporations want in terms of what the legislative branch cranks out.
Right.
It directs them to pursue its interests abroad in terms of what the executive branch carries out. And now we see that the Supreme Court is willing to abandon supposedly their most cherished conservative principles to uphold the ability of corporations to control our election process. So, unfortunately, I think this is going to be a long battle. I think it will be a battle that will be won, but this is a battle that is about reversing, essentially abolishing the power of corporations. It would have to be like a new abolition movement eventually, yeah, to abolish the power of corporate supremacy over our Constitution and politics. But now this is one of the worst blows to democracy in the history of the Republic.
And I would argue that yeah, some of the fundamental problems we've had with our system of governance in the past 10 years have related to the failure of the three branches to check and balance each other. And in particular, it is the money that flows into the campaigns of congressional members that neuters them or neutralizes them in an honest oversight that would have, in my view, precluded the confirmation of Alito and Roberts to the Supreme Court, and that many of the issues that trail from that might be decided very differently, either by the Congress or by the judiciary, if we did not have this massive flow of cash that reflects corporate interests. And Carl, your client and my friend, a man I deeply admire, Chris Hedges, has argued with me recently that this system is irretrievably broken, and that the corporate influence, and I consider Chris Hedges to be the kind of intellectual engine of the Occupy movement in many respects. And the case that he builds is that we have become so thoroughly corrupt, and the military adventures that benefit certain corporations that then produce cash that can be pumped into political campaigns, that we have this incestuous cycle that has to be broken, and somehow from the outside, because the internal mechanisms have failed.
Yes, I think Chris is largely right in that respect. I remain somewhat optimistic that the people will rise up, and there will be a corporate abolitionist movement in this country. I don't know what form it will take, whether it will be an electoral third party movement or a populist movement, but it's one that will abolish the modern corporation as it has come to grow, as it has grown up and corrupted our politics. So I remain optimistic that will happen. I just think it's a grave disservice to the nation that Montana was not able to really make a stand here and fight with all their might to, in the words of Governor Schweitzer, light a prairie fire, because a prairie fire was lit at the end of the 19th century in the populist movement,
mm-hmm,
and the progressive movement, and they could have used this case as an opportunity to do that and to reverse this slide towards plutocracy and tyranny. And it was a big missed opportunity, and you know, credit goes to Adam and the 11th Amendment folks and other people who have been trying to make more innovative arguments in front of the court.
Adam, would you like to comment? Is the system irretrievably broken and just bought and paid for in a way that is too corrupt?
I don't have enough political experience to define that one way or the other, Peter. I've been an observer of the political scene for many years. In 1984, I considered running for Congress. And all along the way, I've been kind of in and out of getting directly involved in politics. It can be very frustrating at times, as we all know, even for the other side. You know, they have their ideals and principles, and they are committed to them every bit as much as we might. But that's politics. On a larger scale, I feel that through increased communications through the internet and other sources, more people than ever before on the planet and in this country, more people than ever before are more informed about, quote, what's really going on behind the scenes, what, for instance, the Federal Reserve may be doing, or what Congress is actually doing, or what the lobbyists are doing. So more people are more informed than ever before. And I am optimistic that that will translate into a realization, both at an individual level and then as a group, that we're just not going to take it anymore, as the old movie line said. We're going to get mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore. Now, some of that anger can be translated into actual real action to be taken, and that's the path that we tried to do and are still trying to do with the 11th Amendment movement. We could have really gone out and attacked everybody, and even now, it's hard to resist, you know, attacking the Attorney General for not doing this. Well, they had their reasons. They can still do some things to improve the situation. So we're still going to take as positive an attitude as we can. More people will respond now that they see what's happened. Our message will get out there. There are more things that we can do in a broader scale, and we encourage people to look at their own actions. What can they do right now instead of, you know, doing nothing or listening to your show is great, but now what actions can they take? And I encourage people, we can have another show, to perhaps resist the calls to get involved with the folks calling for the constitutional amendment, because that may be a long-term divergence of efforts to other things that can be done right now to actually overturn Citizens United. Congress can act tomorrow and strip the court of the Citizens United jurisdiction from 2 years ago through the exceptions clause to the Constitution. They can do that tomorrow if there's enough call for the people to do it. So I'm optimistic that people will get activated and will be out there trying to communicate some things that people can do in a positive note.
Carl Mayer, we have heard you refer several times over the last couple of weeks to a Montana case that is in U.S. District Federal Court there, related to, I believe it's the same issues. Tell me your thoughts about that briefly, and what other options remain legally to challenge Citizens United?
Well, there are a couple options. One is, as you mentioned, to go into to make the argument in federal district court and make it and persuade the Montana Attorney General that they should try a different tact. I mean, the Attorney General, and I understand the Montana Attorney General had the sign off of 22 other attorney generals, and their tact was essentially, let's get the court to take this petition and hear this case and to, in effect, re-argue Citizens United. So their position was they had consulted with the best legal minds in the country to get this done. Well, I think there's nothing like a loss to make you reconsider things and regroup, and hopefully we can get them to consider a different tact in district court. The other options on the table are to work with other states who may understand. You know, for example, Vermont has a very aggressive public finance scheme, or at least they have an aggressive desire to keep corporate money out of politics. And that's the other option is to work with other states to pose some novel constitutional challenges. But it's a whichever route we go is going to be a tough, hard battle because the corporate groups are relentless on this. The corporate groups today they're calling for the resignation of Bullock and Schweitzer for not upholding the Constitution, which is ridiculous. They may have made an error, but for them to come out and call, for them to resign because they dare challenge the rights of corporations, however they did it, it shows the lengths to which these corporate interests will go. And we saw also Arizona had a well-thought-out public finance scheme.
Yep.
And that was challenged and went all the way up to the Supreme Court and was overturned, again, by the business, same sort of business interests.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's back to the drawing board, back to the chalkboard, and we'll come up with more strategies.
All right. Well, Carl Mayer, I appreciate all the things you do. This is a very important case. I agree with you. It's more significant long-term than Obamacare. And those issues can be sorted out. But the fundamental corruption of our system is something that we really need to deal with. And Adam Furgach, I'm grateful to you for championing these issues, for initiating the 11th Amendment movement, and for giving people some new ideas on how to challenge corporate control.
Well, we appreciate your covering the story, Peter, like no one else has, and getting the word out. And we will continue. I encourage people to continue to visit your site for updates. I know you put our materials on there. And also to visit our website, which is www.11thamendment.org. That's 11thamendment.org. And we'll keep people updated as best we can. We're a bit of a shoestring operation here, but we keep plugging away.
All right. Adam Furgach there and Carl Mayer, too. Thank you, gentlemen. And we will continue to fight for the real American Constitution.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for telling it like it is.
All right. And thanks for joining us today for this important update. Our news and comment feature will next appear tomorrow, Tuesday, at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.